कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी जमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
So we're going to look at a verse today. I'm not sure if it's possible to get the verse up, but this is chapter 9, text 13 of the Bhagavad Gita. So some of you may know this verse, so maybe we'll just chant the Sanskrit. I'll read the text and the purport.
Mahatmanas tumam partha Daivim prakritim ashvitaha Bajanta nanya manaso Gyatva bhuta dimavyayam
Translation. O son of Pratha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Purport. In this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated in the divine nature. He's not under the control of material nature. And how is this affected? That is explained in the seventh chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of a great soul, Mahatma. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside of Krishna, because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma, or great soul, develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or of a human being. They meditate only upon Krishna and Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in the unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. Om Agyan Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatan Sahagana Raganathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees, disciples of Srila Prabhupada, ask for your blessings. May our words and our consciousness be aligned with Srila Prabhupada, Guru Parampara. May Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar be pleased. May all the devotees be benefited, purified by hearing Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. So again, this is the ninth chapter, which is entitled Rajaguya Yoga. As we know, the Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. So this ninth chapter is directly in the middle. And that has significance, according to our acharyas, because if you have something precious, if you have something confidential, this chapter is called Rajaguya Yoga, the king of all secrets, or the most confidential knowledge. If you have something precious or confidential, you keep it safely protected in the middle. Protected on both sides. So, there's this term, Mahanidhi. Mahanidhi means the great treasure chest. If you have a great treasure chest, the treasure is protected in the middle. There's a lid and there's a base, and in the middle are the valuable jewels. So this ninth chapter has very confidential knowledge. Krishna just gives little hints of it. There's a few verses here and there that give hints why this is so confidential. But our acharyas, being lovers of Krishna, many more details are revealed to them. So in the commentaries, if you read from the little hints of Krishna, you begin to read what the acharyas are saying about that hint, and that hint opens up into a whole world of, you know, developments of that secret and details of that secret. So what is the key to unlock this treasure chest? And there's a key. It's protected, it's also locked, and you need a key. So Krishna, in the first verse of this chapter, he reveals the key. Why is he speaking to Arjuna? Why is Arjuna able to hear these most confidential secrets? So Krishna says, idam tute guyam tamam pravashyami anusuyave bhaktosi me sakacheti. The reason why Krishna is revealing these secrets to Arjuna because he's a very close friend of Krishna's. That's the key. When you become friendly with God, intimate with God, because secrets are between intimate friends, right? You don't just broadcast secrets to anyone and everyone. So anusuyave means, Arjuna, because you have no envy towards me, I will now speak these secrets to you. So we're very fortunate because whether or not we're friendly with Krishna, we get to hear, we get to listen in on the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. And so how fortunate we get to listen in to a very confidential subject, especially here in the ninth chapter. So even we may not be qualified, but we have this opportunity to hear a transcendental conversation between Krishna and his dear friend Arjuna. So that is a great blessing on all of us. For example, in the a verse at the end of the ninth chapter, Krishna gives some confidential knowledge, and our acharyas expand on what this means. So this verse says, samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priya ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. So first Krishna says, samoham sarva bhuteshu, I'm the same for all living beings in this material world. Name dvesho, I'm not against anyone. Stina priya, and no one is dear to me either. This is kind of a surprising point. Most people think you can immediately connect to God, or I've been favored by God because this worked out in my life, or maybe I was striving for something or some coincidence took place, then we say it's God has done it. So immediately everybody points to God's interaction with us. We can pray to God immediately and have some interaction. Then God sent the God revealed something to me. But Krishna here in this verse is saying, I'm neutral to all living beings. No one is dear to me. And I'm not against anyone either. So here we're speaking about the Paramatma. The Paramatma is neutral. God is in the heart of all. But the Paramatma only does two things. He has his Srishti Lila, he creates the material world, and then Sakshi. He's just witnessing everything. Neutral. Just witnesses. What is he witnessing? What is he watching? And what's happening by his power is our karmas unfolding. Just the destiny is unfolding for most. For the ordinary conditioned soul, God is not directly interacting with anyone. He's indirectly interacting as the Paramatma, which is just a witness to all of our actions, and all the reactions are coming. So sometimes this is referred to in Sanskrit as daiva, which daiva means destiny or sometimes providence. This is happening by the providence of God. This is not Krishna in Vrindavan who's sending this or sending that or cursing somebody or blessing somebody. It's said that Krishna only interacts with his own internal energy, not with the external energy. For that, his expansions as Paramatma. And that Paramatma is also not doing anything. Just sanctioning, allow the living being to do what he or she chooses, And then comes the karmic result from that. So that's not a very, you know, satisfying point, right? This is interesting, Krishna says, as Paramatma, I'm neutral to all living beings. No one is dear to me. No one's my enemy either. I'm just watching, and everyone is getting their destiny according to their own activities. But the second half of this verse gives great hope. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya, but for one who loves me and is always serving me, mai te teshu chapyaham. And listen to his language here, it's very interesting. Mai te, I'm in them. Teshu chapyaham, and they are in me. This is not just talking about location, that he's located there. He's already located in the heart as Paramatma. He's not being redundant here and saying, but for my devotee, I'm in them. And they're in me. It's not location, but this is an exchange of the internal energy. There's an exchange. Once you're under the shelter of, as described in this verse, text 13, that we chanted in the beginning. One who's under Daivam Prakritir Ashwataha, one who's under the divine energy, they now have an intimate relationship with God. And there's, even in your material life, there's a very intimate relationship that is now taking place if you're under that energy. If you're not under that energy, what energy are you under? Huh? Yes, the external energy. So the previous verse says this also. The previous verse tells you another energy that you could be under. Only two choices. Previous verse says, prakritim, so the same word. Daivi prakriti means divine energy. And here, in the previous verse of text 12, prakritim mohinim ashrita. Mohinim. Others are under my illusory energy, the material energy. So these are the two. This is incredible information we're being given. This is confidential knowledge. There's a divine spiritual energy which one can submit to and surrender to and be under and have an intimate relationship with God. If that does not take place, one is simply under the material energy and God is neutral in your life. He's a witness. He's waiting for that time where we want to become more than neutral. He's neutral to us because we're neutral to Him. We're living our own life in our own way, and we just want to go on. You know, there's happiness, there's distress, there's my situation, my life, my family. Because of that self-centered, that egoistic consciousness, then Krishna Vrindavan disappears. He's hiding. And Paramatma is simply watching and giving the reactions. Waiting also. Paramatma's also waiting. Right, the Upanishad says there are two birds. One is the individual soul, one is the Paramatma. One bird is just eating the sweet and the bitter fruits. We're eating sweet and bitter fruits in this world. Some are sweet, some are bitter. And the other bird, what's that bird doing? Just watching the bird who's eating, waiting for that bird who's eating to just turn and look in his direction, the direction of the Supreme Soul. And then something else is possible. So, in relation to this material world, in the ninth chapter, also the ninth verse, Krishna says, Asaktam teshu karmasu. I have no attachment to any activities in this material world. No attachment. I'm not against anything. I'm also not for it. So, there's a way in which we have to come under God's internal energy to actually relate with Him in a sweet and intimate way. And the big question is, how does that happen? How to do that? When you come under this energy, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, now you have a different title. Even though you're the Tathashta Shakti, you're an individual who has a choice between two energies to come under. Tathashta means you're right on the border. You stand between two worlds, the spiritual world and material world. Even as we stand in this material world, we're still standing on the verge of another choice, of another world, the spiritual world. And it's by this word, which is very deep. What is it? But if I surrender to that spiritual energy, then I come under that power. So once a person does that, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, they, in a sense, change their nature. Now they're called something else besides Tatashta Shakti. They're called Tat Svarup Avishta. Tat Svarup Avishta. They've now become filled with the Svarup Shakti, the internal energy of God. It's filled them. It's come into their consciousness and it permeates their whole being. And now that person, where the spiritual energy has come into them, that's what's moving that person now. That's what's motivating them. You can't just look at a person and know, really. There are some signs. We'll get into what those signs are, one who's actually under the spiritual energy. But a lot of people we see, devotees and others, are living the same, getting up in the morning. You do what you do. You go out. You may have a family. You may go to work. But they're actually operating under two completely different energies. So there's an old verse that Jiva Goswami quotes from the, I believe it's the Padma Purana. Na devo devam archayet. Na devo devam archayet. This is an interesting verse and point. It says, you cannot worship the devas, the demigods, unless you yourself become a demigod. You know, you think of Indra, he's in his own abode. So what will I do down here as a conditioned soul? I cannot approach him. But if I qualify myself to go to that abode, there are devatas and there's also upadevatas, those who are under those devas. Now, once I go there and I'm with Indra, I see him, now I can serve him. So why is Jiva Goswami quoting this verse about demigods? It's a principle. The same principle holds true for Krishna. I cannot really worship and serve Krishna unless I become, in a sense, of the same nature as Krishna, which means under his internal shakti, his spiritual energy. His spiritual energy is one with him. So this is why Prabhupada would sometimes say, you have to become Krishnized. You become Krishnized. Or he would say sometimes also, you become Krishnite. Or another way of saying is that you have to become Krishna conscious. Once you're Krishna conscious, that's another way of saying you're under this energy and now you can actually interact with Krishna. So na devo devam archayet. You cannot worship, truly worship God and love God unless you become godly. And how does one become godly? You make a great effort? No. You surrender. It's a little bit different. Of course, surrendering is also an effort. But it's a kind of letting go of our false identity and surrendering to the idea that I'm the eternal servant of my Lord and Master Krishna. I surrender. Let your will be done. Now I want to serve you. We hear again and again in the scriptures that if one says that sincerely from the heart, not just words, it's easy to say, I just said it, I'm not doing it. But if we truly say it with the whole being, and the whole path is a series of surrenders until we get to this point where fully we realize what it means and we give ourselves completely, atma nivedana, we surrender the soul, Prabhupada says in the purport here. When one surrenders their soul to Krishna, the atma, then one comes under this spiritual energy, daivi shakti. And then Krishna becomes emotional with you. Paramatma is not emotional with anyone. There's no emotion in the Paramatma. He's just watching. But Krishna can be very emotional with you. When one comes under the spiritual energy, it's said in one place, again by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says, only at a certain stage of maturity on the path of bhakti does Krishna become emotional with you. What stage is that? Asakti. When you become truly attached to Krishna. When you become truly attached and then you call out the name Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. When you have attachment and you chant from that attachment and you chant those words, he says that Krishna starts to tremble. He hears that and it really affects his heart. He becomes emotional and he reaches out to his devotees, sends his mercy in more and more ways so that you come closer and closer. This is possible. Can you imagine having a relationship with God, the supreme controller, the source of everything? But he becomes soft and emotional to your calling his name, and he's drawn to you. He's Krishna. It means he draws everything to him. Krishna means comes from Karshana, to attract. So by his very nature, he attracts everyone once the heart is purified. The heart is covered, we're not attracted. As the heart gets purified, we get attracted. We start to call his name from that attraction, and then Krishna becomes also attracted to that devotee. So, this is what's possible in Krishna consciousness. You know, we have to surrender. This surrender, and again, it's sometimes it's this existential decision. After making many small decisions in different parts of our life to surrender, I'm confronted here with a choice. Let me do what actually pleases Krishna. That one, if we just live by that day after day after day, let me put myself under the devotee of Krishna who loves Krishna. I may not be under the spiritual energy, but someone is. Let me put myself under that shelter. Actually, it's described that if you put yourself, you may not be self-realized, you may not have love for Krishna, but if you put yourself under the shelter of a person who does, then what happens is, they are loving, by their service to Krishna, their love to Krishna and service, and if you are obedient to that person, then you are under the field of that devotee's, what's called his Kriya Shakti. Kriya Shakti means the activities. If you're under the the desires of a pure devotee who's trying to do many things in this world in Krishna's service, just like Srila Prabhupada, right? He was doing so many things in Krishna's service. You go to Africa. You go to Japan. You do this. You do Didi Seva. You come with me. You give Bhagavatam. You open a temple. He's sending, dispatching all of his surrendered servants to do this, do that. Even without the realization, if one stays obedient to those desires of a pure devotee, then one, even without their knowing, they're under a certain protective energy, the Kriya Shakti of that devotee. And as long as one stays there, if you stay in that consciousness that my spiritual master is everything, they've ordered this, maybe I can't do it right away, but it's my cherished goal is to keep submitting to the desire of my spiritual master. We hear so many things Prabhupada wanted. We stay connected to that, you know? Prabhupada was given an order to come to the West when he was a young man from his spiritual master. He didn't do it right away. But for years, his consciousness was, I will never let go of this desire until I do it. It must be done somehow or other. I don't know how it's going to happen. But it was the order of my spiritual master. I will surrender to it. That is the protector. Then you are under the shelter of a pure devotee. They're under the internal energy, and now I come under them. And in this way, if you remain serving in that way, then you get purified gradually. The spiritual energy is also entering into your subtle body. Yes, this is also a point. These are secrets. Another secret by Rupa Goswami. He says, Avir Bhuya Mano Vritto Vrajanti Tat Svarupatam. If one is serving their spiritual master in this way, this is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this verse. Avir Bhuya Mano Vritto. Then the love, which is bhava, transcendental love, comes into your consciousness, manovrito. It comes into your, manovrito means your chitta vrittis. It comes into the movements of your mind, your material mind. And it starts to permeate your consciousness and change you. Vrajanti tat svarupatam. Svarupatam means it becomes one with your nature. And then as I mentioned earlier, tat svarupya avishtat. And you become filled by this spiritual energy. So this surrender is the real thing. One time somebody came to Srila Prabhupada and they said, so tell me the secrets of Krishna consciousness. This person was interested in mystic Christianity. And he knows there are many great secrets, and spiritual masters, they have secrets. It's just beyond what people learn from churches or temples. And this is a great master. He must know some real secrets. So he came to Prabhupada, tell me some secrets. And Prabhupada said, no, there's no secrets. Everything is out in the open. But then this person kept continuing in this way, and Prabhupada, well, we have one big secret. One big secret. And if you follow it, everything will be realized. Love will be yours. Your eternal nature will come. One big secret. What is that? And Prabhupada quoted, Sarva Dharman Padichyajamam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. If you surrender completely to Krishna, this is our one big secret. Surrender completely. All knowledge will come to you. All love will come to you. Your eternal nature will awaken, and you will be with God, always. So it's worth meditating on this surrender, what it means and how to do it. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur has a nice point in this regard. At the end of his life, he had two very intimate disciples of his. And he was beginning to share some things about his biography, about his life. This is the guru of Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So he was sharing things from his life. And these devotees later explained that at some point he said, he began to lament a little. Imagine Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He had done so much in the service of Krishna in this life. His life was getting closer to the end. And so he was sharing some of these things with his disciples. And he said, there's one thing I wanted to give, but very few have understood it. And he says, it is this point of drig, drishya, vichar. This is interesting because it sounds very philosophical, but it was so important to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur that he began to cry a little telling this to his disciple. I wanted that everybody could understand this point that I've been trying to make, but very few have understood it. Drig drishya vichar. So I'll translate what that means, but then we'll see how deep it is. Drig means the seer. Drishya means the seen, that which is seen. And vichar means to deliberate. So he said, one of the main points I was giving throughout my life was so that the living being can deliberate on who is the seer and who is the seen. Because if you think how we live and what our attitude is, you know, you wake up in the morning, I'm seeing everything. I'm the seer. I'm the subject. I'm looking at things with these eyes I see. With this mouth I talk, with this mind I think. And I can make judgments on people in different events. I'm making the judgments. I'm doing. So we're locked into this misconception. Now it's true to a certain extent, right? Right? It's true to a certain extent that we have these powers, given by God, of course, but we have these powers to do something, to see something. By the power of my eyes, I see those trees outside. So those are objects, and I'm the subject. But the reason why vichar, deliberate on this very deeply, is because in relation to material things, I may be the seer, and those things are seen. I see all of you. I see the walls. So there's some truth there. But in relationship to aprakrita vastu, supernatural things, I am no longer the seer. I am no longer the doer. I can't make things, I can't do anything. I'm powerless in relationship to aprakrita vastu, spiritual things. That means, what are spiritual things? Tulsi Devi. I have no power to see Tulsi Devi, to serve Tulsi. But if she blesses me, then something can be revealed. Spiritual things means the Bhagavad Gita. I think I'm going to read the Bhagavad Gita. You cannot do it. You are not. You don't have the power to just decide to read and to understand the Bhagavad Gita from your intelligence. But if I'm very humble and I realize I'm powerless, this is Shabda Brahma, spiritual sound. I'm powerless. I submit to it. When you read, if you think in this way, I'm reading, but I'm not really reading. But if Krishna wants to reveal what he's saying in my heart, then I fall at his feet and beg for some revelation. Please show me, Krishna, something. Teach me something through Bhagavad Gita. The pure devotee, you cannot see the pure devotee. We'll judge the pure devotee. Somebody is giving class and our mind is always in a state of judgment, analyzing. You cannot analyze if it's, you know, you can, but you'll miss what's possible. So, hearing the pure devotee, Krishna, the name of Krishna, you can't decide, I'm going to chant the holy name. Now I'm going to sit down and chant Krishna's name. You can say some words, Krishna, Krishna, anyone can do that. A parrot can also do that. Parrot can chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we chanted, yes, we just chanted, we made a decision. But we also hear that it's a completely transcendental Prabhu. Nam Prabhu is a person. And that person also has to reveal himself on the tongue. And then you've chanted. If he reveals, if he shows up and dances on your tongue, then you chant it, not by your power, but by his grace, his deciding to appear when you said those words simultaneously. So this is drig drishya vichar, because it means that in all ways, I'm the one seeing, doing, acting, but with these spiritual things, I'm the seen. I'm not the seer. I'm the seen. God is the seer. God's powers, God's shaktis are the doers. I'm not the doer. I have no power in that transcendental realm. I can only surrender. I can only become humble and surrender. And all these things can take place. So that's the attitude to all spiritual things. That is surrender. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So what is the proof that you have surrendered? You may wonder. He says, to the extent that you have this vision of drig drishya vichar, that you are not the seer, you are the seen by Krishna. This is why we offer obeisances. How do you offer obeisances to the deities? Not straight on, but from the side. Why? One reason that's given is so that because Radha Shyam Sundar can see you. You cannot see Radha Shyam Sundar with your eyes. We see, but we don't see, you know? Their mercy is there, so there's a great benefit and there's a great purification that can take place just by looking. But really, when you lie sideways, your whole body is exposed and they can now see you completely. You come before Prabhupada, you don't directly offer your obeisances to Prabhupada, but from the side, you look at Prabhupada, please glance upon me, I'm your surrendered servant. Engage me, here's my full body, here's everything in front of you, engage me in your service. Of course, the deity is very merciful because even though we're not qualified, we're getting an opportunity. This word, vigraha. So Jiva Goswami has a nice breakdown of this word, vigraha. V means vishesh, means something special or especially. Graha comes from grahanan, means that form. Grahana means to accept. So that form, which especially allows you to give something so that it can be accepted. Vigraha. Vishesh grahana means that wonderful form, the Lord has appeared in this form to allow us to give so that it can be received. Otherwise, we can't directly give to Krishna. So Krishna can appear also. Krishna manifests. He is the deity. And that particular form accepts what is being offered. So this verse from Bhagavad Gita 9:13, Daivam Prakritim Ashrita, this is the secret that Krishna has given, is that there is an energy one can come under. And these are some of the proofs that you're under it. You begin to adopt this attitude, this consciousness that Drig Drishya Vichar. If you just have this one thing that you can say to yourself again and again every day, everything exists, everything, including me. Everything I lay my eyes on in this material world, everything exists for the enjoyment of Krishna. Even me. I exist for the enjoyment of Krishna. So then how can I give Krishna pleasure? By my thoughts, by my actions. Oh, Krishna's watching me. I'm the seen, not the seer. Krishna's watching me. So I'm going to interact with this devotee in such a sweet and encouraging way so Krishna enjoys that. Krishna will enjoy that. So let me act in that way. Oh, I have to go to work. How do I connect that to Krishna? I have to go to work. I have a job. Well, let me behave again in such a way with my consciousness that I'm Krishna conscious in the best way I can be, and that I'm also doing my duty and trying to do it well. Money comes and I support my family. And who are these family members of mine? They are the dear servants of Krishna. And so let me take care of them nicely so that it brings enjoyment to Krishna. For Krishna, it's not really for the other person. It's also incidentally for the other person. But primarily, you're trying to please Krishna. And everything else, everybody else will be pleased if you're truly in that consciousness. So this question, this statement, this knowledge that everything exists for the enjoyment of Krishna, to the extent I live in that way, knowing that Krishna is watching me at all times, so therefore let me do this and not that. Let me take shelter. I have a choice. Let me take shelter of this rather than that, to give enjoyment and pleasure to Krishna, because it's my effort to come closer to him and he's pleased with that. To the degree we do that, to that degree we are surrendered. And we'll forget immediately. I will forget immediately after. Even during this class, I'm forgetting at times. So that will happen. But then again, I bring myself back. Do it again. And by surrendering again and again like this, then some grace begins to come. Krishna becomes pleased. He sends his daivam shakti. Daivam Prakriti Ashrita, his spiritual energy, through his devotee, through the deity, through the holy name, it can come into our heart. And finally the day will come. If we just stay connected to devotees and continue service, finally the day will come where you can say from your whole self, Krishna, now I understand. Now I completely surrender myself to you. Finally, I have realization by your grace of what this means and I want to do it. And you give yourself completely, and Krishna says, and Prabhupada says in this purport as well, immediately Krishna now takes charge of everything in your life. Everything, that means everything spiritually and everything materially as well. You don't have to worry anymore about anything. Masuchaha, this is Krishna's final instruction. Ma me kam sharanam vraja, surrender to me. And don't fear, don't hesitate. I will now take care of you completely. And he likes to do that. He wants to do that. That's his reciprocation. And we become like a child under the protection of a good parent. Child becomes carefree. So you can be a grown man, a grown woman. But when you surrender in that way, you become like a child, carefree. Now I'm completely under the shelter of the Lord, protected in all circumstances. No fear, no worry, no anxiety. Now my life is just an exchange with that love and that shelter. I want to serve. I want to serve more. I want to serve with more love. No matter, even if you're fully surrendered, Another symptom is you think you still have no love. You're embarrassed because you're experiencing Krishna's love, and then you compare your love to that and think, I have nothing. But actually, you have it. Pure devotees have it, but they feel like they don't have it because they're always feeling Krishna's unlimited, unfathomable love. So in comparison, they think, I have nothing. So many secrets are here in the ninth chapter. Prabhupada ends his purport to the 13th verse by says, a pure devotee also has no desire for any other form of God. Just Krishna, sweet, beautiful Krishna. This is also a great secret. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he's speaking to Sanatana Goswami, he's speaking about the opulences of God. And then suddenly, he goes into a trance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes into a trance and he says, emerging into his mind at that point is Madhurya, the sweetness of Krishna. And before that, he's speaking about all the powers of God, Aishvarya. But then he suddenly loses himself and enters into the sweetness of Krishna. And he has a beautiful verse. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after feeling that, he says, Sarvottama Naralila, the supreme secret, the supreme, the ultimate truth is that even though God has many forms and activities, Naralila, his human-like activities, are supreme. And then he says, Naravapu, and of all of his forms, the human-like form as Krishna is the supreme form. Gopa Vesha Venukara Navakishor Natavara. And a beautiful verse he quotes here. Gopa, and what does he look like? He has the clothes of a cowherd boy. Venukara, he's holding a flute. Navakishor, he's eternally youthful. Natavara, and he's the greatest dancer. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy. He goes into ecstasy talking to Sanatana Goswami. And he says, oh, Sanatana, if just ekakana, if you just can taste one little drop of what I'm saying, that drop can flood Tribhuvana, the three worlds, one drop, one fraction of the beauty of Krishna can flood all three worlds. If you can just experience one drop of that. And then he ends by saying, Bhakta Ganera Guda Dan. So this Guda is just like the name of this chapter, Guyam. So he says, the most confidential treasure, dana, the most confidential wealth of the devotee, the bhakta, Guda Dana, is this human-like form of God, Krishna. It is the sweetest. It is the most beautiful. This is the treasure of the heart of the devotee, this beautiful form. It is so powerful that it covers over the understanding that this is God. Because, okay, we can all agree, right? What's the greatest thing of all in life? If you ask anybody, what's the most wonderful thing in this world? The thing that everybody wants. Love, okay. Okay, that's established, right? If you say something different, something's off. Something's wrong, right? Really, everybody knows this. All the songs are about this. The movies are about this. I mean, there are other things we can get attracted to, but really, this is what we're longing for. Okay, so if that's established. Now, let's say there are different kinds of love. What is the most wonderful kind of love? The most beautiful that your mind can imagine? You have to get more and more intimate. Intimate love. Sweet, spontaneous love. Is that right? Do you think a love where you kind of respect, maybe you have somebody above you and you respect them. It's also love. You have a kind of, you can call that love to serve a person, to be dutiful. That can also be said to be love. But when you get very close to a person, very sweet, very intimate, and then exchange. But for that intimacy to be possible, even with God, you can't know that He is God. And He also can't know that He is God. That will interfere with the intimacy of love. Think about Mother Yashoda. If she knew that Krishna was God, She wants to care for Krishna, make him lunch. But if she knows, well, what is this lunch I'm making? He's God after all. You see how it interferes with that sweet motherly love? If the cowherd boys knew that Krishna's God, when they wrestle with him, they'll think, what's the point of wrestling? He can destroy us all in a moment. But actually, they don't know. They're like equals. Krishna might lose. Krishna does lose sometimes. Sometimes he wins, sometimes he loses. And the cowherd boys think, well, we're pretty equal in strength, so I might beat him. So their love is so intimate, so beautiful, so wonderful, that if the idea of him being God was there, it would ruin everything. It wouldn't be possible. So it must be possible then. There must be a form of God where all of that is taken away and you're simply loving him like you love a friend, a lover, a child. This is why the conception of Krishna is the highest conception of God in all of this world. What can compare to this? Where can you find this anywhere else? You can love God in such a way where it is spontaneous love. And Krishna, by the way, also wants this idea to go away that he's God, because that will prevent him from loving intimately. It goes away. So within the Daivi Shakti, there are other divisions of spiritual energies, and one is called Yoga Maya. So within that spiritual energy, there's also categories. One of them is called Yoga Maya, which covers the opulences of God, even the fact that he is God. And so then you're just relating in pure, loving, intimate sweetness. So we'll end with this last point. So you might be hearing that and think, but that doesn't seem right. The highest thing, then all the residents of Raj, of Vrindavan, they're all under like an illusion. So do I know more than Mother Yashoda? I know he's God. Mother Yashoda doesn't. So who knows the truth? Me or Mother Yashoda? This is called from the Tatashta Vichar, from the platform of objectivity. I might think I know more. But the fact is, I don't know more than Mother Yashoda. Because what is truth? Rasa Vaisaha. Truth is rasa. The truth is rasa. Ecstatic love is the truth. So if she is in that state and I am not, that forgetfulness doesn't really matter. She is in a state of the highest truth, and I'm down here analyzing everything, saying, you know, he's God, and these are his powers, these are his shaktis, he's in Vaikuntha, he's in the material world as Paramatma. This is less, not more. Because when all that goes away, then you can actually love that Supreme Being. Rasa is the highest truth. So those who claim, from the objective standpoint, that we have the truth, but the cowherd boys, Radharani, they're under a kind of illusion. Not really. They have the truth, because truth means rasa vaisaha. That's a verse from the Upanishad, that God, the supreme absolute truth, is rasa. That is supreme. If we can appreciate this point, the beauty of this point, then gradually more and more will want to enter into that loving relationship with Krishna. So we'll stop here. We're exactly at 6 o'clock. So I have some time, but anyone who needs to leave, please do. If there are any thoughts, comments, questions. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Very nice class. Very good. I just, when you were talking about the seer and the scene. And the scene. Is that like Satyagana?
Sorry?
Is that like Satyagana? Like knowing the field, the same thing, or is it?
Oh,
different perspective.
Kshetra and Kshetragya. Yes, to an extent, because Kshetragya is referring to the Atma, the one who knows Kshetra. So like I was saying, we know, the Atma knows the field, the things that are around us. But the Atma is known and seen by God. So he's the true Kshetragya. That's why it says Kshetragya means two. It means the Atma, but also the Paramatma. But in relation to the Paramatma, I'm no longer the knower. I'm the one who's known by him. So that's the... Yes. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. So early on in the class, you were talking about Krishna saying that, especially as Paramatma, that he is impartial. And yet we see in the world so many different groups saying, no, we're the chosen one. No, we're the chosen one. And we're more pious. So there's all this pious, you know, posturing. Well, you know, God is more on not my side, the other side. So Could it be said that when it comes to, you know, power, control, land, you know, all this so-called material facility, enjoyment, control, that God doesn't care about those things, you know, your pious credits, sinful credits. And so those things are controlled by the material energy, karmically. And obviously, you know, the golden rule, what we do unto others, have the, you know, is done unto. But when we go vertical, when we go, you know, like you said, what is most pleasing to God? Well, let me think that way. And how can I inclusively serve others or associate with others to increase that? Then that is when Krishna, with his internal energy, reciprocates. You know, is that the differentiation between the piety and...
Yes. Yes, there's conventional religion and there's true transcendental religion. Conventional religion is a kind of piety. It's good in the sense that it's better than passion and ignorance. You come to goodness, you know, you have a certain integrity with life. So that's the mode of goodness. Goodness also leads to knowledge. But that goodness is also of sattva-gun. So it is good, but it doesn't lead directly into something transcendental unless you surrender. Because the crossover from the material energy to the spiritual is this thing called surrender. Sharanagati. So that consciousness that you're mentioning, let this be for the enjoyment of Krishna, living in that way, acting in that way, this is what surrender means, according to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So the more we can imbibe that state of consciousness and that state of action, then we're passing over. The other things are needed too. We can't just independently do that. We also have to be anugatya, under the guidance of a devotee. That's also important. So under that guidance in sadhu sangha, we do those things, we live that way, and then we'll see that the change of heart is taking place. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
We need to take this, like, to get purification, we should, like, take the shelter of somebody who's already pure,
yes,
or who has access to that spiritual knowledge.
Yes.
And how do we do that? It's through obedience. The more, so, like, if we are obedient, then we'd get that spiritual revelation.
Yes.
So, like, we can never really be obedient, perfectly obedient. We always have this shortcoming. Like, I'm trying to be obedient, but there's always I'm lacking with. So that spiritual revelation, is that, like, why, like, since I'd never really be, like, able to be perfectly obedient, how would I perfectly know Krishna, realize?
Yes, so you're mentioning obedience, but every quality that we want, humility, obedience, love, tolerance, you can never get any of them by your own effort. But when you make those efforts, you attract grace, you attract this daivi shakti, and that clinches everything. That's what actually makes it happen. So you're true, you're right. You know, I can't have perfect obedience, but I'm hearing something from my guru, let me try to apply. It's not perfect, but if I try and try and try, I can't really be humble. Humble is a very profound thing. It's a realization that comes to truly feel one's insignificance and have love for Krishna. And that also you can't do. Tolerance, you also can't do. Attention, you also can't do. So, but by the effort, by the desire, and being under that shelter, eventually something can enter into you which makes it happen. And then you have obedience, full, perfect obedience. But what we have to try to be obedient until that comes, knowing that I can never do it on my own. So that's just not true of obedience, but every quality that we want that is actually spiritual. Because again, we are under aprakatir vastu. These spiritual things are above us. They can come down. This is called the avaroha panta, the path of descending grace. It has to descend and then it happens. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I really appreciated the whole explanation of the seer and the seen. And the point about that it applies to aprakrita things,
yes,
the unmanifest, that really, I felt like it just gave me a much clearer understanding about how and, you know, one can actually apply that.
Yes.
And I do like somatic work, like somatic trauma work, and I was just feeling it in my body, like, you know, being a seer versus being seen. Mm. And it was such a difference, like when, you know, when we are just being seen and that's all we have to kind of manage, then it's just such a lighter place to be, and we can actually breathe deeper. And but whereas when we are seeing and trying to control, it just feels so artificial and overwhelming.
And so much pressure on ourselves,
so much
right?
Pressure.
I have to do it. I have to make it happen.
Yeah.
But no, I make an effort, but always knowing that by Krishna's grace, this I'll either look like a fool doing this or he'll make it happen, but whatever it is, I surrender. You know, we're trying to accomplish something, but we know it's dependent on Krishna's grace. So I'm going to do my best. Maybe I'm a fool. Well, anyway, I accept that. But maybe it works out, and then it's also there was Krishna. So, and that takes the pressure off. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
there's you. A question right behind you. The Vegavati.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Actually, it's not a question,
okay,
but a
please.
Comment.
Yes, please share.
You know how you were talking about the Archa Vigraha, the form of the Lord that comes in the temple?
Yes.
And it reminded me somehow, one time Prabhupada was describing how Krishna, people everywhere know that God is great, you know. And so at one point Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna, he's bigger than the biggest, and he's smaller than the smallest, but he also comes in a nice medium size. Mm-hmm. So when he's in the deity form, and someplace, he said, you can't put a garland on the sky.
Yes.
But we can make flower garlands and offer it to Krishna and offer him nice food and all the things we would do for one another, we get to offer to the deity.
Thank you. I just wanted to share that.
Beautiful,
beautiful. And that medium size, like we were saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that is the supreme form because it allows for closeness. Smaller than the small, you also can't put a garland on a little subatomic particle, right? You can't put, but you could, someone your size. So Krishna's just like the size of somebody's grandson. It's like a little boy that allows for you to be close. Therefore, it is the supreme manifestation of God. Yeah. Something else? Okay. Okay.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have a question about Kriya Yoga.
About?
Kriya Yoga. Is this taught here? Kriya Yoga.
Kriya Yoga.
Is it taught here?
Uh-huh. So Kriya Yoga, that's described in by Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras. Kriya Yoga. So it means action. Kriya means action. So it's doing certain actions that help you link. So it can also be an equivalent to karma yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. So kriya just means action. So by performing particular actions, service in a dutiful manner, like karma yoga, then one starts to gradually elevate through the modes of nature, coming to sattva-gun, the mode of goodness. But that's kind of where it ends. That's why bhakti yoga includes things like action, activity. But because it's with devotion and it attracts God, then God actually can pull one out from material consciousness and one can be in relationship with God. So kriya yoga, it kind of has similarities with karma yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. But it means certain actions that help to elevate us through the modes of nature to a very high level of the material modes called sattva-guna, mode of goodness. Yeah.
With practicing a certain type of breathing, like...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you so well.
I think it's... Is it on? Is it better? Okay. So, about breathing... very powerful. It's like cobra breathing. That's what I'm trying to get
yes.
to.
Yes, these things can be helpful. Breathing, meditation, certain practices of Kriya Yoga. They kind of, again, they bring us up to a state of consciousness where one could be more receptive to spiritual life and spiritual practice and spiritual truth. So they're good in the sense that they bring you up to a level where you can be more receptive to the divine energy coming into you. But by themselves, they can't lead to that divine energy. So therefore, we emphasize bhakti. Not so much of these practices, although if a devotee is doing these things, it also can be healthy for the mind and for the body. There's no problem if one does it with the intention It's not directly bhakti at that point. It's called Sangha Siddha Bhakti. It has a relationship to bhakti, which may be good, but it's not directly bhakti.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So we should stop. Sorry for keeping everyone so long. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Go to Premanandi.